date is January 14th. This is Ruth Hendrickson interviewing Martin Glatton for the Harford County Library. Send it.
When I did the last time, was that okay?
That was fine.
There's a couple things I had in there. I thought maybe you might want to erase. I don't want to.
This here. Here. Okay. All right. Why don't you just tell us where you were born?
Okay. I was born on a farm in Delta, Pennsylvania. And my name is Martin Glatton. And,
where was the farm? The
farm was in, right out of Delta on I can't think of the road anymore. The road's on there. About a mile out of Delta.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived there since 1929. And then we moved down to Baltimore County for 3 years. My father was a farm manager. And then we lived there 3 years, and then we decided to buy a farm. Am I doing this right now?
Mm-hmm.
I moved back to Harford County in 1929, about 3 miles from Dublin. And my father bought a real nice farm up there, which we later, when my mother died in 1969, sold the farm to the Boy Scouts, because my father used to go out in the rain and snow and bring the Boy Scouts to our house when the weather was bad. So when we decided should offer the farm to the Boy Scouts first. So we did, and they bought it. And we sold the farm for $72,500 in 1969.
Which I'd been around to buy it.
Yeah, 99 acres. And it had a mile of road frontage.
Uh-huh.
And, so we could have kept it and developed it. We didn't want to do that. And
mm-hmm.
So we all felt better about it than the Scouts had it.
Sure, sure. And the Scouts still have it.
The Scouts still own it.
What was it like growing up on a farm?
Well, I loved growing up on a farm.
Did you?
Except for milking a cow, I guess. I had to get up so early.
You think you can still milk them?
Pardon?
You think you still know how to milk a cow?
Pardon?
You think you could still milk a cow?
Oh, I think I would try.
How many cows did you have?
We only had about 18 cows.
Mm-hmm.
We were a small farm, only 99 acres.
Mm-hmm. Who did you sell the milk to?
Mr. Baltimore. They wanted rid of me. We hauled it down to Dublin. They had a creamery at Dublin where we used to take it in the cans. And I used to haul the milk for the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
I bought a truck and hauled the milk for the farmers. Well, in fact, I bought a truck prior to that. Being on the farm, a man came along and wanted to get some veal calves. And I would go out and find veal calves for him, and he paid me $1 for each calf I got for him. So I was doing pretty good. So I said, why don't I buy my own truck? So I bought my own truck and did the same thing. And then I hauled the own calves, but I wasn't old enough to have a truck yet, so I bought a truck and I hid it in the woods. My father didn't know I had it.
That's funny. When did he ever find out?
It was about 3 or 4 months later he found out about it. But I kept the truck. Then I become of age driving myself.
Mm-hmm.
I become 16.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how much you used to sell the milk for?
No, I can't remember. Well, the whole total milk check with 18 cows was about $100 a month.
Wow.
So, which wasn't so bad in them days, I guess.
Yeah. And
then unfortunately, he bought the farm during the Depression besides.
Oh, my.
And so he had a lot of life insurance, and he had to give up the life insurance because he couldn't keep the farm and the life insurance involved.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to give up his life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
We did keep the farm, which was great.
Do you think it was easier for people during the Depression that had farms?
I think so. We ate pretty good.
Yeah.
I would go to school, and I would take pork chop sandwiches to school with me. And the little girl sitting next to me would keep looking at me. And one day she said, Martin, would you swap me sandwiches? And I said, sure. She said, you do pretty good. So I swapped her for a bologna sandwich, which tastes good to me, but I didn't see much of bologna either.
I'm sure. Was your mom a good cook?
Yes, my mother was a great cook.
Uh-huh.
And we always had, every year everybody would come home for the reunions. We'd come home to my mother and father's house
mm-hmm.
every year for Christmas or the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a very close family.
Mm-hmm.
I had four brothers and one sister.
Are they all still in Maryland?
Well, two of them have died.
Mm-hmm.
Two of my brothers, Paul Bakken and Charles Bakken, have died.
Did they live in Maryland?
And they did, yeah. And my brother Paul was in, we were in the real estate business together for mm-hmm. years. And my brother Charles was, lived up in Rifle, and he worked at, originally worked for Bendix, and then he worked for a color chart place up at Rifle in mm-hmm. later years.
Mm-hmm.
He is deceased now. And my brother Paul died in 1979. Cancer and lungs.
Hmm. Where did you go to school?
I graduated from Dublin High School, and when I graduated Dublin High School in all 4 years of high school, I was the class president of my class. So,
how many people were in your class?
13 in my class.
Wow.
Uh-huh. And we still meet every 2 or 3 years.
Do you?
And I think we're down to 9.
No, oh, that's not too bad. That's
pretty good.
Because mm-hmm.
I'm at 79 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not kids anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember anything special that went on at the school that you used to do? Or what you had to do as president?
No, not too much. I didn't. There really wasn't much you had to do in those mm-hmm. days.
Where was the school?
Right in Dublin. It was called Dublin High School now. So it's been built on about 5 different times since mm-hmm. I went to school there, and it became a grade school instead of a high school. It was a high school combination when I went to school there.
Mm-hmm.
You went to the first grade all the way through to the end.
Mm-hmm. How many teachers were there?
I'd say it was probably, I imagine, 4 or 5.
You had to hope they liked you. You were stuck with them for a long time,
had
huh?
one for every class.
Uh-huh. You know. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Inslow was the principal. His wife was still there.
Were they pretty strict?
Yeah, they were pretty strict.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So what did you do after you left high school?
After I left high school, I got this truck, so I bought a bigger truck. And I came home with it in 1934. That's the year I graduated. I mm-hmm. bought a big truck, and I brought the truck home, and my father said, "What in the world are you doing with that?" And I said, "Well, I just bought it." I said, "I have one problem." He said, "What's that?" I said, "I think you're going to have to go up to the bank and sign." I went up to the bank. Every time to sign, I think you're going to have to go up to the bank. So he never did tell me he went up to the bank, and I don't think he ever did. But I kept the truck, and I paid for the truck.
Mm-hmm.
And I hauled milk for farmers to Dublin Creamery. And then I would haul coal down from Pennsylvania, and I would sell it by the bag. Got by the truck and sell it by the bag
mm-hmm.
and put it in people's cellars.
Did most people heat with coal then?
Most of it was coal or wood.
Mm-hmm.
Either heat it with coal or wood.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had to come home awful dirty.
Yes.
I remember a coal furnace when I was a kid. I remember how dirty we got. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where were you born?
I was born in New Jersey.
New Jersey, I'd mm-hmm. see. I had mm-hmm. a lot of relatives in New Jersey.
Did you really?
Mm-hmm. Sister-in-law is from New Jersey. Dorothy Glacken is from
mm-hmm.
New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a lot of relatives in Philadelphia, New Jersey, New York.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now you're done doing the coal and the milk, and did you go on to bigger and better things?
Well, then I went from hauling that. Then I was coming down from Shamokin, Pennsylvania, with a load of coal, and I got stopped by a guy on the street. He said, "Sonny, you want to make some money?" I said, "Certainly." He mm-hmm. says, "Why do you haul roofing paper? Yeah, down south." And I said, "All right." So I went back to York, and he hired me, and I hauled roofing paper down south, and then I hauled peanuts in great big bags back to Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Oh, my.
So, what I'm saying okay?
Yeah.
So I got picked up and down the south with my truck, and every time I would turn around, I was getting topped by the police, and I couldn't understand why. And then I found out what was happening was that the truck drivers had been on strike, and nobody told me that. So they were in cahoots with the police.
Uh-huh.
And the police kept stopping me and making me put new lights on my truck.
Oh, my.
It looked like a Christmas tree.
And how long did you do that?
I did that 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I quit there, and then I went to work down at Conowinga Dam. I went to the Conowinga Dam and tried to get a job, and I walked up clean across the dam. They were doing the spillways, and
mm-hmm.
I said to the foreman, I said, "I'd sure love to have a job." He said, "Son, I'm very sorry, we just can't use you." So I'm almost off the dam, going home with my head down, and And I turn around, I hear somebody yelling. I turn around, he's going like this. So I went back to him. He says, tell me that story you told me. I said, I'll work this week for nothing if you pay me what I'm worth next week. So he said, well, come to work Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So he put me on a jackhammer. I guess he's going to fix me. I didn't even see the jackhammer was up. So I got a job there, and then I worked there that summer. Then I went to Pennsylvania. They're starting to build the Pennsylvania Turnpike, and I got a job as a timekeeper. And one day, one of the fellows was on, we had tripods where we were drilling out of tunnels, and one of the fellows fell off the tripods, and there was two decks, one set of men on top and one on the next deck down, and one guy on top dropped the drill, and hit one of the men in his privates. And so I went to the foreman and said, let me finish this drilling out. He said, son, you don't know how the hell to do that. I'll take that back.
No.
Okay. So I said, well, let me try. So in the meantime, what had happened was one of the men on the job had been letting me learn how to drill. And
mm-hmm.
I had learned to drill pretty good by that time, because
mm-hmm.
he never saw me doing it. When he was around. So they had got fired, probably. So I finished the thing out, and then I became a driller, which increased my income considerably, because the timekeeper didn't pay much.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the end of that. So
did you live up there while you were working on it?
I lived in Shippensburg, which wasn't too far away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I lived in a room in a house. I had a room in a house.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sure doesn't sound like you weren't lazy.
No, I never. I never wanted for something to do.
Uh-huh.
No.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to work for Sears Roebuck and Company as a salesman, selling farm equipment up in Pennsylvania. And then I was transferred to North Avenue in Baltimore. And did a lot of different things around there. Well, the manager one time at the store said, I said, Mr. Wise, how come every time you start a new department, you call me? He said, well, whenever I come to work in the morning, you're always walking in front of me. I never thought about that.
Uh-huh.
But I guess it paid off. So.
Yeah, they know good workers.
Yeah.
Where did you live when you worked in Sears?
I lived about 4 or 5 blocks away
in a house,
regular house. I had
mm-hmm.
a room there.
Yeah, I guess North Avenue was a little different then.
Yes. Yeah, it wasn't the same as it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And how long did you stay there?
I worked for Sears. I went there at Sears. I went there in '39, and then I went in the Army in 1941.
When did the Sears store open down there?
It opened in the late 30s.
And how big was it? Was it the size that the store was when it closed?
Yeah, it was a big store.
Mm-hmm.
It's called, they had three kind of stores. They had A, B, and C stores, and that was an A store because it was a great big store.
Mm-hmm.
You remember the store?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole area has changed now.
Yeah.
In fact, the last time I remember, they boarded it up for a long time.
Yeah, I don't know what it is now.
I don't know
now.
What's in there now.
Unless, is it part of the police department or the court or something?
Yeah, there's something in there. I don't know what it is.
I don't know either.
Mm-hmm.
So you went from there to the Army.
Then
did you get drafted?
No, yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
I was drafted, and then they wouldn't take me because I had a hernia. So I had to go to the doctor and have and I went to Dr. John Finney, who was quite well known in this area at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, son, how did you come to me? What doctor sent you here? And I said, nobody. He said, why'd you come to me? I said, because if I got to be cut on, I thought I might as well get the best one around. So he smiled, and he said, what do you do? I said, I'm off the farm. Of course, I was off the
mm-hmm.
farm, and I wasn't. And so I was off the farm, but I didn't tell the whole story. But anyhow, so he said, well, you got a hernia on this side, and you got one starting on the other side, and we'll do them both at the same time. And then he said, while we're in there, we'll take your appendix out. So I had three operations in one.
For the price of what?
And it cost me $105.
Wow.
Yeah, total, which is a lot different from the day. He wouldn't even talk to you for $105.
No. What hospital was it in?
I was at Union Memorial.
Uh-huh.
Union Memorial Hospital.
Mm-hmm. For $105, you couldn't even walk in the office.
No.
So then you went in the Army after that?
Then I went in the Army, and I was in the Army. I went in the Army in 1941. And then went overseas in 1940. Landed in Casablanca, North Africa, night before Christmas. And 1942. Mm-hmm. Well, really, we thought we weren't going to be tough to fight when we got there. We got in a little world when we got there.
Did you really?
And then we went from Casablanca all the way to Tunis, North Africa, and we fought Rommel on the way. General Rommel was German. And then we finished that war, and then we went to Sicily. We invaded Sicily.
What kind of unit were you in?
I was in the medical, I was a combat medic, and my job was, we weren't on the back lines, we were right up front, because each company had a medic, and I was sergeant of the medics, and had a real nice captain, he was our captain, and he liked to go up front and call the firing for the artillery, too. Because he just liked to do something different. You know,
uh-huh.
So he had a lot of nerve to go up there, too. Well, everybody had a lot of nerve. Anybody said they weren't scared in the war, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody can say they weren't scared.
Yeah, and you had to see the awful part, the really awful part of it as a medic.
Yeah, and we didn't have any, when we quit, we didn't have a gun either.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was quite something.
Did you choose to do that, or was that
well,
what you ended up with?
Actually, what happened was the captain picked his men, and he picked everybody. He said they had to have a certain IQ. That's what I want, men with certain IQs.
Mm-hmm.
So he picked me and 21 other guys, and we were the medical corps. We established the medical corps, and we didn't have many stripes. Or when I say stripes, we didn't have much to give away as far as corporals and sergeants and all that stuff. Because I was a top sergeant and I was a staff. But one of the men I had in there was a lawyer, and he was a lawyer all 4 years, but still never become more than a private. But he didn't care about getting any stripes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So did you get much training, so you knew what you were doing?
Yeah, we were pretty well. We were trained, and when the war broke out, I was in Fort Knox, Kentucky, shooting crap. And I said, "Where in the world is Pearl Harbor?"
Oh my!
When they said Pearl Harbor's been hit, and I said, "I don't even know where Pearl Harbor is."
Mm-hmm. I imagine most people didn't.
No, and they turn around and ask somebody, and one poor guy was supposed to go home, I think in about a week or 10 days, because he had put his year in, but he never did get to go home. He went overseas with us.
Huh. He was a little late, huh?
He was a little late, yeah. Then we started heading toward the United States for about 10 or 12 days before we... Then we turned the ship around. We knew something was going on. We knew we weren't going home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were decoying the Germans.
Ah.
And so we turned around and we landed in England. And then we sat there 2 or 3 months, and then we made the invasion of France.
Mm-hmm.
And landed at Omaha Beach on D-Day. And I was pretty lucky because there was 5 of us boys. And we all went to serve.
Mm-hmm.
We all come home.
Wow. That's beating the odds.
And I come home with a boy when I was discharged. Well, I wasn't discharged. When I came back from overseas, I come home with a boy from Baltimore. There was 2 brothers who went in the Army together, and one of them got killed.
Mm-hmm.
So I went home with him.
Mm-hmm.
To his family.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever get shot?
No, most I ever got was I got hit on the nose from a shrapnel. That was the most I ever had.
Well.
But I didn't take a Purple Heart.
Didn't want it?
No, I didn't want it.
I guess when you'd seen everything else everybody else was through, that seemed like nothing, didn't it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can you still remember that? I mean, if you just stop to think about it, can you still see what you saw and remember it never leaves, huh?
Yeah, you still have it. And I remember we were down the bottom of a hill, and the Germans were throwing artillery, and we were laying underneath a half-tribe. And I said to the other boys with me, I said, "I'm going to get out of here." So we got in our ambulance, looking at the half track, and went up on the hill. And then they called us, and we went back down here. One of the boys that had been laying under there with us, and we picked him up.
Mm-hmm.
He was pretty well beat.
Yeah.
And the only thing he asked me, I said, now you can eradicate it. The only thing he wanted to know, how was he joystick?
Oh, my.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
In the war. That's what life's all about.
I guess.
But if you don't want that on there, it doesn't matter.
No, that's fine. So you think you're a different person because you went to the war?
Pardon?
You think you changed you as a person?
I think it taught me a lot about life.
Yeah. You don't take it for granted, I guess, when you see that going on around you.
Yeah, I think it taught everybody something that was in the war.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it taught a lot of people at home something too.
Yeah.
I mean, we weren't the only ones worrying about the war. The families were worrying about all their relatives, you know.
Sure. Your parents had to be worried with all of you over there.
Yeah, everybody had to be worried. Yeah.
Were you all overseas?
No, four of us was overseas, and I guess you could say my one brother was in the. He was really in the Coast Guard, but they finally decided that the Coast Guard was part of the Army in later years.
Uh-huh.
At that time, they didn't consider it being part of the service, you know, mm-hmm. but they really were, because they were right out there.
Sure.
So my youngest brother, Paul, was Coast Guard.
Mm-hmm.
And my oldest brother, Charlie, he landed on D-minus. When I say D-minus, he was an amphibious engineer, and they landed to take the mines out before the regular troops arrived. And they lost 60-some% of it.
Right.
Of the company on the first wave.
I guess you couldn't think too much about what you were doing, or you wouldn't have done it.
And when I was in England, he had come directly from the States over to England, and I found out where he was over there, and at that time we were confined to the quarters because of waiting for the invasion. So I found out where he was, and I went to see him. And he almost died when I got there, because he said, "You're going to get locked up." They're going to court-martial you. That's what I ain't going to worry about. So I had a fellow take a picture of it. I was two standing there by a Jeep,
mm-hmm.
which I just gave to my niece about 3 or 4 months ago. Mm-hmm. I think I gave her the picture of him not down in England by the Jeep.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the way over, we were on LCI, I think it was. It wasn't a very big boat. The boat broke down.
While it was at sea?
While it was at sea. Mm-hmm. And of course, the English Channel was pretty rough. So we're sitting there like dead ducks in the middle of the ocean with nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the fellows was on the ship with a watchmaker, and he's the one, he got the boat rolling again. So
he was the hero.
He was a hero at that time.
Yeah. Did you encounter any of the famous generals while you were over there?
Yeah, I did see De Gaulle in North Africa. The war was all over, and I heard all these people getting going around and around, and I said, "I wonder what's going on." So I worked my way up to the front of where all these people was, and I stood up, and here was De Gaulle standing right there.
Uh-huh.
They weren't long getting me away from there.
You look like a dangerous character.
Yeah, De Gaulle, if you ever saw anything, but De Gaulle was he was real tall.
Yeah.
Man. And then I saw Roosevelt and De Gaulle and Stalin and Potsdam. And I also saw, when General Patton, which I call was a real soldier, and Eisenhower, I called him a diplomat,
mm-hmm.
and which is fine.
Yeah.
I needed both.
Sure.
So, and Patton loved to wear those two guns on
mm-hmm.
his hips. And anyhow, when Patton was in Sicily, and he slapped two soldiers, and because he thought that if you're going to be a soldier, you shouldn't have to get CE when they were in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And he slapped them, and then they had a meeting, and they were going out to speak to apologize to the soldiers, to all the officers
mm-hmm.
for what he did. But he never did it, really. He never did apologize, because he thought that nobody should be, everybody should be ready to go. And then when we landed in Sicily, we had to have we wore our necktie and our sleeves rolled down. And somebody said, "Why is that?" And I said, "That's what you call discipline."
Mm-hmm.
He said, if you look sharp, you'll be sharp.
Mm-hmm. Things have certainly changed.
Yeah.
Certainly have changed.
Well, that's the way it was. And
yeah.
Well, he was a good soldier. And unfortunately, he got killed over in Germany
mm-hmm.
after the war was over. Unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
he got killed. And I belonged to the 2nd Armored Division, and I used to go every year to the we'd have meetings once a year, and his son, George Jr., was always there. He was a member of the 2nd Armored Division, too.
Mm-hmm.
And Patton was, when I first saw General Patton, was in Louisiana maneuvers. We were having maneuvers, and we had tanks at that time, and the tanks had upset, and the soldiers laying on the ground, and Patton wanted to know what's wrong with the tanks. He wasn't worried about the soldiers. That wasn't because he wasn't kind, he just, mm-hmm. but he wants to know what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, during the war, he really wanted to go out there and fight. Patton was the number one soldier. He was not afraid of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he was right up on the field. When you saw any of the movies about, that was written about the war about Patton, they were all true.
Mm-hmm.
Where they were pretty.
I saw the movie Patton. Yeah. He was out there with his guys. Yeah.
He was.
Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't sitting back letting everybody else do it.
He didn't say you didn't do it. He wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. You know, he'd be right up front. He wasn't worried about it.
Do you think the men respected him for that?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sure they did, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I never heard any soldiers listen to criticize him.
Mm-hmm.
But we always said, you're our blood and your guts. That was our slogan, your blood and our guts.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Did you ever go back to Europe after the war?
Yes, ma'am. I went back to Germany one time with Pepe Simmons. He was a local meat man here in Bel Air, and we went back to, I think it was 1979 I went back with him, and we went all over Germany, and then we rented a cab and had a guy haul us, carry us all around, and we were there a couple of weeks. And,
looked different, didn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't the same anymore.
Yeah.
And then we got on a train. We went down to his home when he lived in Passau. So we took the train to Passau, and we got to talking to this conductor, and we had some little miniatures of whiskey with us. So we gave some to the conductor, and we got him about half loaded, I think. Anyhow, we got on the train to come back from Passau to go back to Nuremberg, I think we were going to. Here we run into the same conductor again.
You got good seats.
Yeah. So he said, my sister said, if you see them Americans, then don't you dare speak to them. So I'm coming and going.
That's funny. Yeah. Oh my. So now then you came back to the States. Where did you come back to?
We landed in Connecticut. Then I was discharged at Camp Lee, Virginia.
Mm-hmm. And then what did you do? Rest for a little bit?
Yeah, then I had a job because I worked for Sears Roebuck and Company. And so I took off for a little while, and then I went back to work. And in the meantime, they had what they called a 5220 club, which means if you came back from the Army, you could draw 20 bucks for 52 weeks, which I never did because I had a job.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to work after not too terrible long. And
did they have to save the job for you?
Yes. Well, they, in a sense, they did. Mm-hmm. Anyhow. Now, if you were married and then worked for Sears Roebuck and Company, they paid you so much while you were in the Army. But I didn't get paid because I was single.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I made pretty good money.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when I was overseas, they sent me a check for $7,000 that I'd won in a contest. I think about $4,000 I won, which was probably more money than I was, much money I was making.
Sure.
And because I had sold all these farm tractors and farm equipment on this contest.
Mm-hmm. So, what'd you do with the money? Do you remember? Did you spend? Did you blow it?
No, I didn't know.
Didn't even buy yourself a little present.
When we went overseas, if you had $100, you went overseas. When you could turn it back in, you could get $150 for it.
Yeah.
In French money.
Mm-hmm.
It was really French money because it was all of Africa was really under the.
Mm-hmm.
They spoke French in Algeria and whatever else they spoke. And so we had this one Jewish fellow who had made a lot of money shooting crap and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he was shipping money home.
Oh.
His name was Harry Stearns. And I saw him once. Well, I saw his wife and him on TV about 8 or 10 years ago, I guess it was. I was watching some kind of program on TV, and here was Harry sitting there with his wife.
No kidding.
Sitting on the front row.
Oh, wow. Did you recognize him?
And Harry was always, yes. Harry was always one of them. Before the war, before we left England, they court-martialed Harry because he wasn't supposed to leave the area, and he left. So they had I was a sergeant, they called me and some of the other men in and said, Did you guys see these orders? You're supposed to leave. And we said, no, we didn't see them. And then I said, well, I can't believe it. Here's a man that wants to go fight a war, and you guys are going to court-martial. So they didn't court-martial.
Is that right? Wow.
No, they turned him off.
Uh-huh.
So what they should have done, you know, why court-martial man?
He's going right.
To, he's willing to fight a war.
Sure, sure. Huh. So anyway, now you're back, and you went back to work for Sears?
Yes, and I went back to work. Then when I went back to work for Sears, then I got restless. I went up and told the personnel director I was going to take some time off. And she said, how long? And I said, I don't know. So I took off. I got back in 90 days from the time. I went all the way to California and back. I did 11,000 some miles. Because I went up or down or wherever. And then I went down into Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And I went everywhere I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I got home just before Christmas that
mm-hmm.
time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then did you go back to Sears?
Then I went back to Sears.
Uh-huh.
I worked at Sears for a few more years, and then I started I opened a gift shop, a novelty shop on Lock Raven Boulevard while I was working at Sears.
Mm-hmm.
And still had, and then I got tired of doing that. I had my car stolen twice at Sears Roebuck.
Oh, dear.
So I said, I'm going to get out of here. So I was starting, at that time I thought about selling real estate, and my brother was already in the business.
Mm-hmm.
So I quit Sears Roebuck and came to Harford County and went in the real estate business in the early 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Wise had said to me, the manager of the store, said, Martin, he says, I'm certainly sorry to see you leave. He said, but I want to tell you, he says, if you ever want a job, you have one.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't leave with a bad,
right.
bad record.
Sure. Well, they know good workers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you went into real estate with your brother?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And where was that, in Bel Air?
Bel Air, on Main Street in Bel Air.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, originally we were on Office Street, and then we moved to Main Street
mm-hmm.
after a few years.
Mm-hmm. And, what did you sell then, mostly farms?
Well, in those days, there was like 10 farms for every two houses, mm-hmm. I think, we had for sale.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, now you can hardly find a farm to sell.
Mm-hmm.
But back in those days, everything was farms, because
mm-hmm.
we were farm oriented anyhow.
Sure. Were they starting then to start building developments in lower cost housing for the returning
Gordon
veterans?
Gordon Burton was one of the original people who started building low cost housing. I guess we would call them low cost then. We did, but then I guess we wouldn't even call them then. They started Wakefield Meadows.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And they built Wakefield Meadows. Then they built Willoughby Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And Willoughby Beach was not quite as expensive as,
mm-hmm.
as Wakefield Meadows.
Were people moving into Harford County then from Baltimore?
People moved. Then people would say, when people would come up here to look at houses, and their neighbor would say, what are you going to move all the way to Bel Air? Thought it was like moving out of the world, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then it wasn't too many years, and they were moving 30 miles north of Bel Air.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I think that I'm just not really happy with all the how fast we're growing here. I think we're growing almost too fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't blame that on anybody for what's happening here, but it's just happening. You have to live with it.
Yeah.
But I'd rather not seen it.
You have to try to get smart about it.
Yeah. We had a lady, I went to a zoning meeting, and about somebody wanted to develop some land, and the lady stood up and was raising the devil about letting people move in, and so the attorneys, one attorney said, now, Mr. Brown said, now, lady, how long have you lived in Harford County? He said, she said, 2 years. He said, how many children do you have? She said, six. He said, sit down.
That's
so he was telling her something. You
sure.
Know, you can't move here and tell nobody else not to
right.
move in. So.
Right. And have six kids in school and yes. complain about someone else.
Complain about
yeah.
too many, mm. too much development.
Mm-hmm. So Bel Air was really a small town?
Small town was
here?
Very small town. When we first started here, there were no shopping centers of any kind in the area, of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
And,
everybody shopped on Main Street, I guess?
Main Street was where all the shopping was.
Mm-hmm.
And so that stayed like that for about a year, and
mm-hmm.
it finally started breaking out.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is the biggest change you've seen, just the way it's growing?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing about it, is how much and how fast it's growing. And then making provisions for roads and schools and
mm-hmm.
sewer and water and all that. It's been a tough job trying to keep up with all of it.
Do you remember the first house you sold?
No, I can't remember which one it was now.
Remember what an average cost of a house was?
It was probably $10,000. Wasn't very much. Because housing, and we sold houses in Hyde Park for less than $10,000. We never had a park yet. And Warden, that's the first one, actually that's the first one that Warden Brothers built. I'm sorry, they built Hyde Park, and then they built Wakefield Manor. And then they built Willoughby Beach.
And just kept growing after that. Where did most of the people work that lived around Bel Air?
They worked in, most of them, had to, if they didn't work around here, they had to go to Baltimore or Wilmington or Delaware, not Newark, Delaware. A lot of them worked over there for General Motors, different ways.
And how did they get there then? What were the roads?
The roads weren't so bad. They had pretty good highways, and even them days were traveling up there for all the traffic there was. Now I wonder, they built a big road from Bel Air to Fountain Green, but you can't get no railway if you get down there. You go from four lanes to two lanes.
Yeah, you go real fast for a little while, and then you slow down again. Did you see any famous people in Bel Air? Did you ever see anybody famous come to Bel Air?
Not famous, but I guess if I remember anybody, it's Rhett Brown. I remember very well. He was here in Bel Air, and of course he wasn't famous. He was, well, I guess he's famous for what he did.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't call him famous. No.
I vaguely remember that people were really worried.
Yeah, they were really
worried. Really worried what was going to happen.
And then I had some young people came in my office on Main Street at that time, which was in cahoots with all that, because they knew a lot of people around here and selling magazines, and I was in one room, my secretary was sitting in the next room, and finally I found out what they were up to, and I said, I'm very sorry, but you had to pick this time to try to sell me a magazine. I said, but you're not selling me one today. So you might as well leave. But they were shipped here, they were told to come here particularly to work on people's conscience while Rhett Brown was here.
I vaguely remember it, and I remember everybody being real nervous about could happen.
And of course we had the old Hartford County Fairgrounds in the days, and the old Hartford County Racetrack down the road. And of course, Havre Grace had the biggest racetrack, and one of the biggest in the whole of the United States at one time, which was a mile track.
Did you ever go there?
Yes, I went there, and somehow I was down there, and I won some money. I won about $200, which was a good bit of money. And I came home, and one of the guys I was in the army with, in the war with, called me from New York and wanted to borrow some money. So I sent him the money, but I never did see the money. So I wasn't too upset about it, because it's come easy, it's gone
easy. Right. Did you keep in touch with any of your army buddies?
Yeah, I still do, and I still get, when I was in the army, I was named Sam, because I was issued pants that were too long, and I wore them anyhow. So some guy started singing, Sam, you made the pants too long. So I got named Sam. So that's all I was ever called in the army,
that's
was
funny.
Sam. But I still get my letters.
Do you really?
Still come, Dear Sam.
Have you ever gone to see any of them or had reunions with any of them?
I used to go to reunions until I had my stroke in '88. I used to go to reunions about every year. We had one. Well, they have them every year. But now a lot of them are dying. There's not as many around to go. And we still have I wonder what that was. Lady Priest and Little Child on a wagon.
I guess it's kind of hard to forget those guys that you went through all that with.
And I bought, when we were in Sicily, one of the men, soldiers, traded 2 cases of sea rations for a ruby ring, and I always admired it. I didn't know what it was at that time, but I admired it, but he never sell it to me. So I said, his name was Luigi, Louis, you call him in the United States, we call him Luigi over there, Luigi Tiratola. So finally, before I was coming home, and I said, I sure would love to buy that ring. He says, okay, it's yours. I said, well, I don't have any money. So he gave me the ring anyhow. I said, well, when I get home, you get home from Europe, I'll come to New York and bring you the money. So I got home before he did, and he got home eventually. And so I went to New York and paid him for the ring, $150. This is a good bit of money in these young days.
Sure.
But I really wanted the ring.
Uh-huh.
And now I gave the ring to my nephew, who was my namesake, named Martin Cochran.
Mm-hmm.
And he has the ring now.
I hope he knows the story behind it.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And, I mailed home a Nazi flag, a big Nazi flag, and I gave it to my neighbor. And then he got to thinking about it. He says, you better give me something in writing where you got this from. So they'll think I'm a Nazi. So it's a beautiful, well, it's a great big flag.
Uh-huh.
And I got to write him a note that where the background of the flag, so,
uh-huh.
So he won't be, if anybody would come in and say, where are you going to this flag?
Right, yeah, especially now. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you bring back any other mementos?
No, unfortunately, everything I had was stolen. My duffel bag was stolen.
Oh, dear.
On the boat, and I had a dollar bill on that I had carried all during the war that I'd written down each battle we were in or wherever we were. I'd write on the back of this dollar bill.
Uh-huh.
And I had the dollar bill covered back in front. But my duffel bag was stolen. I never lost my dollar bill.
Oh, no.
So I know he was upset about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wouldn't have taken $1 million for
sure.
Dollar bill.
Sure. Yeah, but with you through everything.
Yeah.
Huh. I wonder if somebody still has it somewhere.
Somebody must have kept it. Yeah.
Maybe someday you'll just get it in the mail. Who knows?
Well, I didn't say where it was from, though.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, just I didn't have anything written on there. Just where
just
it
all
went.
The battles.
Didn't have my name on it. I should have put my name on it.
Yeah.
So,
huh.
And I'm going all rambling all around. That's
here, good.
But anyhow, I did get in the war. I did get the Bronze Star and a nuclear cluster from the Army.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very fortunate to get.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people should have had them besides me.
Mm-hmm. Would you have done anything different? You had it all to do over again?
No, I don't know much I would do differently. No.
You hadn't had your choice, would you still gone to the war?
I sure would have. And we all went to the war. I'd say the first time I probably could have stayed out of the war if I didn't go have my operation.
Mm-hmm.
And but I really felt like I wanted to go to not to the war, I felt like I wanted to go in the Army, mm-hmm. whatever I was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And all my brothers went in too.
Mm-hmm. I think that was the general feeling, wasn't it? Everybody
and
wanted
we were all
to go.
Farm boys, and we could have mm-hmm. found a way. Some of them did find ways to stay out of there, but
mm-hmm.
we never did.
It was different, I guess.
Yeah.
People were a lot more patriotic, weren't they?
I think something. I don't know what it might have been back in those days. We never gave a second thought, hardly, about
mm-hmm.
getting going to the Army. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, times were different, I guess.
Yeah.
In some ways, it'd be nice to have some of that back.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. Yeah. Well, I think we got it all, Mr. Blackman.
All right, okay.
Anything
else
you want to add?
I don't know. I think I did tell you that there was five boys and one sister brother,
mm-hmm.
and we were raised as Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
where did you go to church?
I went to church, St. Mary's of Powellsville. Well, first we used to go to St. Paul's, which was a little parish church in Cardiff, Maryland,
mm-hmm.
which is right near Wyford. And
is that still there?
No, unfortunately, the Archdiocese decided several years ago that they were going to close up that church and close St. Ignatius and Hickory at the same time,
mm-hmm.
because they said they weren't safe. But the first thing that happened was that the fire company wanted to use our little church in Cardiff to have meetings in, so it sounded like a little political
uh-huh.
Catholic Protestantism, or whatever you call it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they tore it down.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of my family had, when I say I'm talking about my aunts and uncles, had put statues and so forth in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother, Paul, had paved the parking lot. And at first he bought an organ for the church. brand new organ put in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And a year later, they closed the church. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, my brother and I had paved the parking lot,
mm-hmm.
and not really put hard pressure run down.
Mm-hmm.
And they closed the church then.
Mm-hmm. What's there now?
Oh, a house. There's a house there. I have a cousin that lives in there, a house.
Mm-hmm.
They own two sides of the road at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Both sides have been sold for houses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That whole area is not all that much different, is it? Up around Dublin hasn't changed a whole lot, has it?
No, it hasn't changed that much at all. No.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the places that stayed the same.
Stayed the same. Darlington is one of the other areas,
mm-hmm.
which is fine.
Right, right.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 161, mm-hmm. great big stone house where you get to the creek.
I know what you mean.
And Oaky Bishop lives there.
Mm-hmm. It's so beautiful in there.
Oh yeah, he was from Virginia. Mm-hmm. He was West Virginia. And I see him, I go to therapy every week, and I see him, he goes to therapy up here. He had an operation on his leg.
Mm-hmm.
And, I had a stroke in 19, I think I told you about
mm-hmm.
that. Mm-hmm. 1988, I was recovered in the hospital from another operation on my neck. And that's why I'm in this wheelchair. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of scary. You were healthier going in. That's kind of scary. You were healthy
right,
going in.
And I should have known better. My doctor's name was Dr. Starter.
That's funny. That's funny. Is he still practicing?
He's still practicing.
I think I might be careful.
I think I've changed my name. I'm going to be a surgeon.
I think so,
call
too.
Myself by that name.
Yeah. That's funny. That's funny. Well, you sure, I mean, other than not being able to run around, you sure seem like you're doing well.
Yeah, well, I do pretty good. I never look back. And you say, if you look back, somebody might be following you. And, but I always try to keep a positive attitude
mm-hmm.
about everything. No, it isn't going to help you if you're going to sit there and put your head down.
Yeah.
And, so I've always tried to be whatever I should be.
Mm-hmm.
Try to get along.
You think the war taught you some of that?
Pardon?
You think the war taught you some of that?
Well, it didn't hurt me any, I guess, to make me whatever mm-hmm. I am today. I don't know what I am, but...
Well, it sure seems like you were ambitious.
But I didn't...
And not lazy. You think that came from your parents?
Yeah,
and coming from a farm?
Mm-hmm. I think part of that came from the farm. My father was a hard worker.
Mm-hmm. Were your parents born in this country, or did they come here from somewhere else?
My family came... We have a book of our history of our family,
mm-hmm.
and it goes back to 1700s, and the fact of the matter is you cross over to Cecil County, but like you're going to Lancaster and you
mm-hmm.
turn left, there's a place called Pottertown. There's a little
mm-hmm.
church up there.
Mm-hmm. I know where that is.
And I was riding around with one of my friends years ago, and we saw this little church, so we stopped, and here was all these stockings buried there.
Wow.
And that's where the original Clacken was buried,
hmm.
in that little graveyard.
Is that something?
And a lot of these monuments are made out of slate.
Mm-hmm.
And still there,
mm-hmm.
made out of slate.
Hmm. Where did they originally come from?
Ireland. It came from
uh-huh.
Ireland.
Uh-huh.
Original Clacken came from Ireland.
Uh-huh. You ever got back there to try to find them?
No, I never got to Ireland. I was in the war, and I was in England for 3 months, but I never was able. Well, we couldn't go to Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't let us go there.
Yeah.
And then I went back to Germany that time, but I was with Steffi Simmons, and so we never even
mm-hmm.
thought about going to Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a cousin that goes back every year,
mm-hmm.
and she goes up there with all that fighting that's going on.
Oh, dear.
I said, you're pretty brave.
Yeah. Yeah.
I said, we have more people killed in Baltimore in one night than he has killed in Ireland in 6 months.
Yes, that's
true. Fighting, you know, in RA, whatever you call it.
Yeah. People don't learn, do they?
No.
Well, I sure thank you for this.
Okay.
I really do.
All right, well, I appreciate you coming back here.